Hello, curiosity seekers. Welcome to Dissecting Medical History. I'm Ange. I'm a travel nurse, medical history enthusiast, and your host. Please note this is not in any way medical advice. If you have anything that's ever discussed in any of the podcast episodes, please seek medical attention. Now, let's get this story started. All right, we are back today with a true medical crime. We kind of skipped. We did it in the wrong order. We did two fevers in a row, but I really wanted to get the fever ones over with already. We're done with those. We're going to move on. So we're actually going to do two medical true crimes in a row this week and next week. And to tell you that story, I'm here with Mel.
Hello. I am so excited to get back into true crime this week.
It has been a while because the other ones that we recorded, we kind of did them together. So it's been a while since we recorded.
Yeah.
So we're back.
Yay.
This was not planned, but both of the ones that I'm going to do today and next week's, well, we're recording them all today, but we will present them a week apart. But anyway, okay, so I didn't plan it this way, but both of them are from the same area of the UK. Well, so there's a Lancashire area in the UK. It's, I guess, near the border of Scotland. So one of the murderers lived near there, and then I'll talk about how, like, he crossed the border. And then the second murderer, he at some point was living in Lancashire as well.
Okay.
But he was from Northern Ireland, but then he had moved. So that one of those murders took place in Lancashire.
Oh, okay.
Probably.
Okay.
So I didn't plan it that way. So this is a shout out to Joe from Consistently Eccentric.
Hello, Joe.
Because that's kind of like his neck of the woods. If I'm right, I think I'm right. I think that's where he's like, I feel like I should be better at it because.
Joe, if Ange is wrong, send her an angry email.
Sorry. But I think that is. So I feel like Americans are horrible with geography, even with our own, the United States, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this story is called The Jigsaw Murders.
Ooh.
I know. It takes place in the Scotland-England border in the early 1900s. On September 29th, 1935, a woman named Susan Johnson was walking with her brother and found a parcel with an arm sticking out of it. And the parcel was under a bridge about 100 miles away from the murderer, called Moffat, Scotland. M-O-F-F-A-T, Moffat.
Okay.
Scotland. Her brother, Alfred, took a closer look and found what appeared to be unidentifiable body parts. And I mean unidentifiable because there was like skin missing or like it was just hard to tell what kind of body part it was.
Oh.
It's
gross.
It was kind of by the river, so decomposition. Okay. So anyway.
It was sitting there for a while.
Yeah. So the officers were called. Two of them came out, got involved, and did a search of the area to find out if they could find any more body parts. And the result was quite shocking. They found a lot of body parts. There were four bundles found at first all up and down the embankment of the River Lynn.
Okay, so bundles. So bundles, are these like UPS packages?
No,
okay.
I'll explain more.
Oh.
Bundled as in like a bouncing baby boy.
Oh.
And a little, yeah. Okay,
there were. A bouncing baby body.
Yeah. they were wrapped in like a blouse. One package was a pillowcase. There were sheets. One of the bundles contained two heads.
Oh.
And one was wrapped in children's clothing.
Oh.
I think it said a child's romper. To be honest, I don't know what a romper is. Is that like
it's a, like a onesie, suit? Right?
Like overalls?
I would think of overalls, but with shorts, kind of.
I was thinking pajamas, but I know I'm probably wrong. So forearms were wrapped in newspaper that was dated September 15th.
Oh.
So that was a clue for them later.
Okay.
Overall, 70 body parts were found. They were decomposing and infested with maggots.
Oh.
Some of them were. So, you know, it's different. I think it just depends on how much time they spent in the water.
Right.
If there was animals involved, like any of all of that.
Yeah.
So they were found on the 29th, and the murders took place either the night of the 14th or very early hours of the 15th.
Okay.
So not too long. So they've been out there for a little while.
Yeah.
So we'll assume that the body was dropped off on the 15th.
Okay.
And so how many days is that? That's over 10 days.
It's a couple, a week and a half or so.
Yeah. So finally, the media has a good name for a murderer other than Dr. Death.
Wow. So they got a little more creative this time.
To be fair, they didn't know it was a doctor yet. So they probably would have called
Mr. or Mrs. or Miss Death.
Yeah. So they just said,
Death.
The jigsaw puzzle.
Just because there were all these random body parts.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons why this was a good play on words for this murder. And the first one is because there were so many parts that they had to put together.
Oh.
The other one I'll talk about in a second.
Okay.
So the reason it's called the Jigsaw Puzzle Murders was kind of brilliant because this case helped put forensic science as a trustworthy form of evidence to help convict criminals to the forefront of technology. Because we're talking like...
Around 1935 or something?
Okay. So it's a pretty big deal in the early 1900s to have forensic science used in this way. It was definitely something that was being sought at more often. And it was taking place more often with universities. So... what they were able to do was superimpose photographs with the reconstruction of the body parts. And by superimposing it, they could figure out, yes, this was this person. So they had to figure out who was missing and then get pictures of those people, then superimpose the pictures of the body parts they had over the pictures of the dead people, or the missing people, I should say.
Right.
And see if it matched.
Okay.
And that's how they were able to get a match.
So that was pretty accurate then.
It was very, yeah. And I'm going to show pictures on Instagram. Yeah. And you can see how accurate it looks.
Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing.
That's pretty cool.
So it's a very challenging thing, especially since there's two bodies.
Right.
It's like trying to do two puzzles.
Yeah.
But all the pieces are mixed together.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he wanted. So not only was the bodies decomposing.
Yeah.
But he made it very challenging for them. And I'll talk about that too soon. So it was stated in many articles that it was not an easy task. Probably no puzzle I would ever want to work on.
No.
The body parts... I just realized it cracked my knuckles right so in front of the microphone.
Cracking in the background.
Sorry.
In the foreground.
I haven't been able to crack them in a few days. You know when you want to crack them and then you
get that urge.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I digress. The body parts were taken to the University of Edinburgh, where they were cleaned and treated to get rid of the maggots.
Mm-hmm.
And they were put in a preservation solution until they can get sorted and reassembled in the forensic lab.
Do you imagine having that job?
No. They found when they did so that the killer used his knowledge of anatomy to help prevent identification, and he only used a surgical knife.
Ah.
He removed fingerprints.
What a way to give yourself away.
I know. And I'll talk about that in a second, too.
Okay. Sorry, he removed fingerprints. So he removed like the fingertips, like cut off the... Oh.
Yep. Teeth and facial features, like the nose, lips, ears.
Oh.
He skinned the forehead.
Oh my God.
Yep. Even stripped the bodies in various places, like the thighs and arms and whatever, various parts. I read the report of body parts that they tried to assign to each woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really disturbed by the fact that they could only find one breast of Mary.
Oh.
And they couldn't find the uterus of Isabella.
Oh, God.
I haven't talked about who died, but...
Mary and Isabella. Mary and Isabella.
There you go. And in fact, the internal organs were never recovered of Isabella.
What did he do with all these parts?
Well, I don't know if he like did something with them, or maybe there was another package that had the innards and they were just never found.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe it went downriver. I don't know. Oh. So those are more soft tissue things that maybe...
Yeah, I guess those are easier to lose.
Maybe a Loch Ness monster got...
Right, old Nessie.
which is a lot more north, but whatever. So Dr. Buck Ruxton was born in 1899 in Bombay, India. His real name, I'm about to butcher, is Bhaktar Rustamiji Ratanji Hakim. He abbreviated to Buck Ruxton, thank gosh, just for this podcast.
Just for you.
Just for me. When he moved to England, he abbreviated.
Okay.
Good for him. Okay. So a lot of people do that when they come to America.
Yeah.
When they immigrate, they change their name.
Yeah.
And reduce it or change it or whatever.
Yeah, they just use a part of it.
He earned his medical degree at Bombay University and then served in the Baghdad and Basara Medical Service. Buck and Isabella were never actually married. He actually... Okay. I read that she was actually married to a man named Van S. She managed a cafe in Edinburgh, and I guess he swept her off her feet or something.
Mm.
She was considered fit, which is UK slang for today to mean hot.
Oh.
She was good looking.
So for you folks in the UK, Joe, that we have dedicated this episode to, fit here means... good physical condition?
Yes. Like
a lot of cardio?
Yeah. Like a lot of muscles, yeah. Not just hot.
I was imagining this buff little lady.
Nope. I've learned that slang for they're hot, they're good looking, whatever. Okay. So she was fit for her day. And she was a very social person. She was very outgoing, they talked about how she was at a ball and would like dance away, and he was just kind of like cowering in the corner, just watching. I don't know if cowering is the right word, but he was just watching. He started a practice at Dalton Square and lived as though they were married. So it was common law wife. I guess that's a thing there in UK as well.
Okay.
Where you're living as husband and wife, but you're not actually married.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there living in Lancaster. They had three children, and they hired Mary Jane Rogerson, who was only 20 years old, as the nursemaid to the children. Mary was only 5 feet tall, with light brown hair, blue eyes, with freckles on her face. Isabella was 34, and she was 5'5", with some slight gray in her brown hair. They said that she also had gray-blue eyes and a light complexion. I wonder if her eyeballs...
Oh, yeah, because that's another thing that
Did I say that they took out her eyes?
You didn't say anything about the eyes, I don't think. You said the teeth and the finger pads.
Yeah, I don't
think
pads. I did either. I wonder if her eyes are in there. She was only like 35, 34, so that's not very not very old. It was probably because Isabel had cheated on her husband Van with Buck.
Okay.
That put it in his head that she could possibly do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that is a thing. People get paranoid that it's going to happen to them again.
Yeah,
because
it
happened the first time.
Yeah.
He was having outbursts and paranoia, and he would even get very cheerful. There was a lot of fights and violence because of his jealousy. Hmm. In 1933, Isabella had told police, after a big fight, that Buck had started to beat her. Of course, he denied it and took it a step further and told the police that she was cheating on him.
I don't think the police care.
No, they don't care. They don't care back then.
But she's cheating on me.
And yeah, it's still an issue of like, they believe the guys.
Of course.
It's like a good old boy system, right? Of course they do. Isabella tried to commit suicide in 1934. And when that didn't work, she left Buck and went to her sister's. He did that thing where he cries and says he's sorry, won't happen again. Ugh. You know, that please come back, blah, blah, blah. And she did go back.
Oh,
a year later, Buck accused Isabella of having an affair again with a man who was a younger son of a family friend's, the Edmondsons. In May 1935, Buck mentioned to the police that he felt like killing two people, his wife and the man that was enticing her into an affair.
He is one insecure little guy, isn't he?
Yeah. He also mentioned that he wanted to file a court summons against the man.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. He wasn't even legally married to her. So, yeah. Like, what did he expect that to happen? I was in May. And then, I mean, she died in September that same year. On September 7th, just 7 days before her death, she left again to Edinburgh to the family friends, the Edmondsons, which I feel is probably not the smartest thing to do if your husband's accusing you of sleeping with their son.
Yeah.
Right? She probably should have thought that one out better, but maybe she was like, screw you, I'm going anyway.
Or yeah.
Maybe she's trying to make him jealous. I don't know what her thinking was, but I don't think it was a good idea. But hindsight, 2020.
Yep.
She's probably regretting that decision.
Right.
Anyway, she did return, and she endured his abuse again that whole week.
Mm.
On September 14th, Isabella did this annual trip that she does with her two sisters to a place called Blackpool. Buck assumed that she didn't really go with her sisters on this annual trip, that she actually went to see her lover.
Oh, Buck, you need
to calm down,
dude.
She came home that night around 11:30, and Buck strangled and beat Isabella.
Jeez.
So that's why they think it was either late that night. I mean, if she came home at 11:30.
Can't you just like break it off? I mean, come on.
She has her own car, so yeah. I think witnesses probably saw her come. I don't know. So anyway, Buck strangled her, beat her, and then she, you know. The next day, the kids were sent off to the dentist in another town. And after he came back home, he dismembered the bodies in the bathtub. Experts estimate that it took
why did he kill Mary?
I will talk about that
in
a minute. But it was probably because she was a witness.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense.
It's probably hard to kill somebody, strangle them, and not be heard.
Yeah.
She might have been there to investigate, and then she was then a witness.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, experts estimate it took about 8 hours to do all that dismembering. Ooh,
that's a whole day's work.
That's longer than most surgeries.
Yeah.
So on October 4th, this is a while later, right? Buck finally reported the two missing.
So he waited a little bit.
Buck Ruxton stated that his wife Isabella and Mary Rogerson had gone to Edinburgh on September 14th. Buck told Mary's step-parents, which I don't feel like this was necessary, but told Mary's step-parents that she was pregnant and Isabella was going to take her to get an illegal abortion.
Okay, so why did he have to
make
a whole side story?
Right.
Come on.
Right. Oh, I felt that was really weird. I don't know if there was any truth to it.
Yeah.
But that was what he told them. So Mary's folks went to the police and gave him a description of Mary. Mm-hmm. The newspapers were reporting that there might be a connection about the missing women and another murder that had taken place. I don't know if I mentioned this, but at first the newspapers were reporting or two bodies found, but they were assuming one was a male, one was a female.
Okay.
Because of the size, I think Mary was smaller.
Oh, okay.
And so they were just kind of assuming that it was a man and a woman. It was
like a couple or something.
Yeah. So they were looking for a couple that was missing.
Okay.
But they were looking in their area, not in where he lived. Anyway, so the newspapers were reporting that there might be a connection about the missing woman and another murder that had taken place. There was another murder that had been...
Yeah.
And so Buck went to the police station with the newspaper that was talking about that and asked them to make the report stop. He said that the murders can't be Mary because that other murder they were trying to pinhole to her.
Yeah.
Because he said that Mary, his maid, only had 4 bottom teeth, and that body had a full set of teeth.
Where did he get these details from?
Well, I mean, it's probably easy to see that someone doesn't have 4 bottom teeth. I mean, every time Mary smiled, you could see she didn't have teeth.
But how did he know the details about the body that was found?
The newspaper.
Oh, the newspaper gave all those, right, those details.
About,
okay.
About the body had okay. a full set of teeth.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. So.
I thought he took the teeth out.
He did. But he's saying, so follow me. The newspaper is saying these 2 bodies are found. They didn't say anything about their teeth.
Okay.
This other person they found, they...
the other one that they found.
There was another murder.
Okay.
They were thinking might have been Mary.
Okay.
Who had been missing.
I see. Okay.
Well, that can't be Mary.
I was getting them mixed up. Okay.
Because she's got too many teeth.
He's like, no, Mary's
over
here
under
this bridge.
But he's not trying to exactly deflect.
Yeah.
From the others that they had found. He's just trying to say that's not it.
Yeah.
So, but he was just getting uncomfortable with any attention.
Right.
Regardless of if it was correct or not.
Right.
Okay, so now that we got that straight. Okay, it was making the gossip about him really heat up because it was no secret that his relationship with Isabella had major issues, especially because he was such a hothead. And it was accusing her of having an affair, like...
Every day.
Out in the open. He didn't keep his feelings a secret. He's very passionate about that. And usually they are when they beat people, like, they have that passion.
Oh,
yeah, they can't keep things bottled up. They explode.
Yeah.
And there was violence that was leading to injuries. Like, there was a gash on his hand. And that was brought up later. He became the prime suspect pretty quickly because there was inaccuracies in what he was telling them with his missing report. Remember I told you that there was parts wrapped in that newspaper?
Right.
Well, that was a big help because that part of the newspaper was from a local edition that was only sold in the area that he was from, not in the Moffitt.
What a dumbass.
Yeah, he didn't realize that. And it mentioned a festival that was only sold in that Lancaster area and the median surrounding areas. So once they had a different area, they started looking for missing people in that area. And that's when they were able to see that Mary and Isabella were missing. Mary was reported missing and they brought her the stepmom, Jessie, to see if she could identify any materials that were found with the bodies. She was able to identify the blouse because of a very distinct repair patch that was under the arm. Later, the children's clothing, the romper. Was identified by clothing that was passed on to the Ruxtons.
Oh.
So they like had stayed there and then like they gave them these clothing. And so
he left a lot of clues out there, didn't
he? Yeah. It's not like you can just go to Walmart and get a blouse that sold at like 500 stores.
Right.
Right. These are more just...
And there are thousands of people that have the same shirt.
A lot of people make their own clothes too, right?
Or, yeah. So it's all very unique back at this time.
Exactly. So an identification was able to be made by using photographic comparisons from portraits with the pictures of the skulls. They used 2 portraits of each woman. On October 12th, he was charged with the murder of Mary Rogerson. And then on November 5th, he was charged with Isabella's murder.
Okay.
During that time, the forensic team were still working their part to keep trying to get as much information as they could. And a forensic pathologist named John Gluster Jr. and an anatomist named James Brash were the ones that put Isabella, I feel like I'm about to say, put Humpty Dumpty back together. Put Isabella and Mary back together again. And then used photographic superimpositions. Oh my gosh.
That's a hard word to say.
Photographic superimpositions to help identify and prove that Dr. Buck Ruxton was the killer.
Oh,
Dun, dun, dun. 11-day trial happened March 2nd, 1936 in Manchester. That's funny because, sorry, the other one has a Manchester connection too. That's so funny. Okay.
Oh.
I feel like there's only weird. Two towns in England, Lancaster and Manchester, because that's all I ever feel like I read. And London, right?
And London, of course.
But I never read anything about London. Buck Ruxton had a very well-known... Now you're cracking your knuckles.
I know.
I've heard that. Has a very... Okay. Let me start over. Buck Ruxton had a very well-known criminal defender. His name is Lord Normal.
Normal. Lord Normal.
Autocorrect. Lord Norman Burkett, KC. I don't know what the KC means. It's something to do with the law. He wasn't Lord at the time, though. It was suggested by the prosecution that Mary was a witness to the murder of Isabella, like we talked about, and therefore became a person at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
It was also suggested that because Isabella's neck was never recovered...
Ooh.
That she was strangled. There were fractures on Mary's skull, suggesting a blunt force killing her. The forensic evidence was so insurmountable that Buck's defense team really had no chance.
Wow.
Yeah, they were that good. He had no character witnesses on his behalf. He did take...
Buck, you suck.
He sucks. Buck sucks. He had, he did take the stand himself, but it was said he did a horrible job, which narcissists usually do.
Yep.
That's the great thing about narcissists.
Yep.
Is they don't realize how
crazy stupid
they
and
sound,
terrible
right?
they are. Yeah.
And so
they think they're good at everything.
So it was
like
great.
Ted Bundy representing himself.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that reminds me of.
That was hilarious. He had outbursts. He cried hysterically. He made no sense of his accounts of any of the events. So Buck was found guilty after an hour of deliberation and was sentenced to hang. His appeal, of course, was denied. Just too much against him.
Mm-hmm.
And on May 12th, 1936, at Strangeways, which I think is a great name for a prison.
That's awesome.
In Manchester, he was hung.
Woo-hoo.
The next week, his sealed confession was published. I read in an article that he confessed to the murders, but actually in his confession, he states he was innocent of the crimes. So I'm not sure exactly what the confession was about. Anyway, one of the things I found really cool about this case is that there was an article on our own government website about this case.
Uh-huh.
However, it didn't talk a lot of details about his life and all this other stuff I talked about. It was mostly about the groundbreaking technology
mm-hmm.
for criminology. It kind of reminds me of how DNA started to become a thing that linked murders together.
Right.
And luckily they kept all this DNA and stuff so that people can go back and find people's murders mm-hmm. and rapists and whatnot from that old DNA. It's like they knew they were keeping it for a reason, but they were just waiting for technology to catch up.
Yep.
So it's kind of like the same thing as like this new frontier of ways of doing things. It's just really amazing.
Cool.
And it was really cool to see it on a government website. In this book I read recently, it was really about different ways of disposing of bodies.
Oh.
It's a really morbid, interesting book.
Is this the Mary Roach book?
No, this is an old book.
Oh, okay.
Old book. It talks about cannibalism.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it talks about this guy butchering, you know, parts and all that.
Oh, okay.
It talks about all kinds of different ways of, getting rid of a body, disposing of a body, acid. Think different ways of doing that.
Yeah.
So... It mentioned him, but it mentioned that dismembering is usually the first step. It's almost
step
like a how-to
one.
Book. Is the first step to the disposal process. For instance, dismembering might be a way to get rid of the body to get it out of the house.
Yeah.
Right? So But it reminds me of one of my favorite movies, a Hitchcock movie, The Rear View. Have you seen that one?
I haven't.
With, oh Lord, now I forgot. It's like one of my favorite movies. Oh, I forgot his name. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he breaks his leg and he's stuck at home. Mm-hmm. And he's a photographer.
Yeah.
So he's a sports photographer. So he's like the really long lenses.
Yeah.
That takes pictures of like car races or things like that.
Right.
So he's got the really long lens. Well, he's sitting there by this window, the rear view, and it's kind of like one of those where everybody lives in a square. Mm-hmm. And there's like a yard down below where everyone kind of shares.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't witness a murder, but he witnessed things where like the wife was there, then she wasn't there. But certain things weren't adding up.
Okay.
And so he thinks she murdered, but he was trying to find proof.
Oh.
And so it reminded me of that movie. You'll have to see the movie. I'll have to watch that. It's a good movie. But it reminded me of that, like how did they get the body out?
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to ruin it for you so you can see the movie. Or anybody else who hasn't seen the movie. It's a really good movie. But it does, he does have to dispose of the body.
Okay.
There was a murder.
Okay.
Because it's Alfred Hitchcock, right?
Well, yeah.
So
got to have a little murder in there.
So we've done a couple episodes now where the bodies were dismembered. And the way in which it was done led police to believe it was a medical professional.
Right.
And remember I told you it's like,
like a scalpel.
It's almost like a calling card. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in the medical field. One of my theories about it is they're not thinking about people figuring out that like this was done with a surgical knife or in a surgical way.
Like, I can't. It sounds like it was more of in a rage. And it wasn't really meticulously planned out.
I think if they're smart, they would go in a rage. There would be more jagged lines, right? More
true.
Right?
Instead of going and getting the scalpel and all your tools.
But maybe he doesn't realize that not everybody knows those skills.
Yeah.
Like if someone's going to dismember a body, if I was going to dismember a body,
mm-hmm.
if you've ever seen me try to take the bones out of a chicken thigh, you would know. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's true.
So
when you do know what you're doing, how do you make it look like you don't know what you're doing? That's probably not an easy feat.
I feel like maybe they can't. Oh, there you go.
There I go. I thought we were safe.
I feel like he can't help but do what he knows how to do.
Right.
Also, doctors are usually, okay, no offense to doctors out there. A lot of doctors, let's just say overconfidence.
A little bit.
We won't say narcissistic.
Like the neurologist I had the misfortune of speaking with over the phone last week. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Yeah. They have an ego sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a doctor with a lot of ego probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast.
No, definitely
he'd
not.
He'd be having a lot of critiques.
Yeah.
But anyway, I feel like maybe they don't. They think that everything else is so far too many steps away from them that they wouldn't be caught anyway.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't matter. But yeah. And then we did that one that was from, was it Sweden? Stockholm? Yeah. Stockholm, Sweden.
Oh yeah.
That he was in the medical field and he also was cutting in such a way.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And he should have known better. Yeah. But again, he had the ego. So
I'm smarter than everybody. Right. No one's going to figure this out.
It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like that. I feel like it's not in them to do a sloppy job.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that.
Yeah. Because if they do that's almost like an OCD thing.
Yeah.
If you do a sloppy job, it looks bad on you even if you don't get caught.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Okay. So that is my theory and take it or leave it or whatever. So we're done.
We're done.
We're done with this episode. Not too bad. Not too shabby. When I first did this, I thought, oh, there's not a lot of information because all I kept finding was the forensic breakthrough, right?
Yeah.
And then I hit the jackpot with this book of information. And then when I went to go research the one that we're going to launch next week, mm-hmm. I couldn't find any information on one either.
No. Oh.
And then I found some UK websites mm-hmm. that like opened it all up. And I was
nice.
Like, yay. And then I found even more information on this guy. So it was really awesome.
Hey.
I just didn't realize that it was from the same area. So again, shout out to Joe from Consistently Eccentric. Hope you're hearing this. We're just letting you know. We're thinking of you.
Hello, Joe.
Hopefully we record again soon. All right. Take it easy. Have a great week. Hope to catch you in the next episode.
Bye. Sounds like a Supreme Court justice is getting sworn in the United States, doesn't it?
Right? Talking about,
sorry,
you know, college parties. And
I like beer.
I like beer. And where? Okay, sorry, digression. This isn't about politics.